Good morning, 8:07 on WMAL, where Washington comes to talk. Joining us this morning on Mornings on the Mall at 8:35, we have Sarah Westwood with the Washington Examiner. A lot going on in politics, and she knows everything about it. She'll give us the news. I'm Vince Colonnaise with Mary Walter. Good morning.
Good morning, and joining us right now is someone very familiar to our audience. And that would be best-selling author Brad Thor. He's got a new book out called Use of Force. Brad Thor, it is such an honor to have you here on Mornings on the Mall with us. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. And you always play me in with such fantastic morning funk music.
Oh, you got to give credit to Heather. She said, Brad loves funk. We got to have funk.
Amen. Amen. Thank you, Heather.
It's a great way to wake up in the morning. Now, you are going to be joining us tomorrow at the East City Bookshop with Larry O'Connor. He's going to host a Q&A session. It's open to the public. 7 o'clock. You can go to WMAL.com for more details. And I've read several of your books. I adore your books. They're wonderful thrillers, and I think sometimes people look at them and think that they're just for guys. But if you love thrillers, you will love Brad Thor's books. I am a fan of these books. Tell me about Use of Force. What is this? I can't even imagine that you have more storylines, because I think you've explored pretty much all of them, but apparently not.
Well, I call what I do faction, where you don't know where the facts begin and the fiction ends. And I always take things from the real world. So for my new thriller, Use of Force, several years ago when a terrorist safe house was raided, they found a laptop. It looked like it had never been used. But when they drilled down into it, they found all of these terrible plots. I mean, really, really bad, hair-raising things. They had things from Miami, D.C., New York, L.A., Houston. But they could never find the guy who had created the laptop. And so I use that for a jumping off point in Use of Force, where this guy's body washes ashore in Italy after a storm. And as soon as he gets ID'd, alarm bells start going off at Langley. Everybody at the CIA is freaked out. Is this guy, was he on his way to commit these terrible, terrible acts that were on that laptop? And so that kicks off the action in Use of Force. And it's just slam on the accelerator and it doesn't let up till the last page.
How much of your writing, I've always wondered this with thriller writers, especially someone who does something like Intrigue and the government, how much of this is based in real life? Do you get your ideas from the news?
I get a ton. I'm a voracious consumer of news. So I'm always looking at stuff and saying, what if? What if it really, we're being told this, but it's actually that? Or what if things didn't go this way, but went that way? And I spend a lot of time talking to men and women I know in the intelligence community, law enforcement, the special operations community, buy a lot of pitchers of beer, a lot of steak dinners. And I ask them, I say, what's the thing that you're most worried about? What keeps you up at night? And then I try to distill that in my thrillers.
All right, you talk about the news. Let me just pitch a crazy concept at you if I could. The son of an unconventional presidential candidate all of a sudden gets offered the political tip of a lifetime and instead is sucked into this swirling Russian scandal by a goofy, vulgar British publicist. Is this something that any fiction writer could ever imagine?
So, first of all, if I had written this, I would have been thrown out of my publisher's office. They never would have bought this. So, you know, and here's what I think. I mean, I worked on Governor Perry, who's now Secretary of Energy Perry's campaign. He was my guy in the primary. He's the one I wanted. Something I'm hearing kind of take off with friends of mine who are not fans of Trump, it tends to be they're not fans of his style, is rooting against him as an American, is rooting for the pilot of your plane to crash it into the side of a mountain. Some other people say, yeah, that wouldn't happen if you've got a co-pilot like Mike Pence. We could go on and on. But what's interesting here from a writer's perspective, just a couple of points. If I was going to create a story like this, the problem would be all of the things that are stacking up in the this isn't so good category. You know, you start with the fact that Trump promised to return his tax, present his tax returns, and then never did. His children, Eric and Don Jr., have said that a large part of their father's fortune has come from Russian money. Trump's bragged about his very, very high-level relationships in Russia. In fact, so high he can't even tell you how high they go because that's secret. You've got all these people that forget meetings with Russians. I mean, they do, from Jeff Sessions to Don Jr. They keep forgetting Jared Kushner. They go to the Russian embassy in D.C., or the intent was to go to the Russian embassy in D.C., Jared Kushner, and set up a secure back-channel communications line to Russia so that U.S. intelligence couldn't listen to them. And then the biggest problem of all, and this is where I think the most smoke indicating, this is the bottom line for me that doesn't make sense with the Trumps in Russia, is how unbelievably soft President Trump is on Putin. and how positive he's been, and they are our greatest geopolitical adversary. North Koreans are bad, Chinese bad, Iranians bad. Russians are the worst, though.
But what's the evidence here that he's been soft? I mean, clearly in Syria, they've gotten a lot more testy than President Obama ever did. The Treasury Department has new sanctions on Russia, and they maintain the old sanctions that the Obama administration put in place.
Well, the sanctions thing, Congress is handcuffing the president on that. In my opinion, if it was up to Trump, he would lift the sanctions. But my concern is that when he's sitting down for an interview with Bill O'Reilly or Joe and Mika, and he says, oh, Putin's not that bad. You don't think we've got killers on our side? You know, this moral equivalency between Putin murdering journalists and all the horrible things Putin has done, and then our brave men and women that have gone over and served in Iraq and Afghanistan. So there is no moral equivalency there at all. And to suggest that somehow our soldiers in our Marines are like Putin, who goes out and murders innocent civilians and kills journalists, it's repugnant. So that's the biggest problem Trump has on this. It's always been Trump. He keeps, although what's interesting this week, we don't see him tweeting about this, do we? It is probably the most disciplined week vis-a-vis Twitter in Trump's campaign, in his short term as president. The fact that he's keeping quiet on this, he lashed out at Nordstrom because they dropped Ivanka's line. Yet here's something much more serious, and he's being quiet. So that's very interesting.
Yeah, what's also interesting, and I think this is where it really reminds me of a book that you would put out, is this whole the Russian spy, the lawyer, this woman Natalia, who now we're finding out was, you know, apparently overstayed her stay. She was allowed to stay here with the Obama administration, and yet she was supposed to be gone in January, but she's here in June, and she made appearances with Democrats and also Republicans, and she was at a whole bunch of different things. So it just becomes such a tangled web. So let me ask you, I want to use your brain. How does it all end? If you were writing this book, how does it end?
Well, I'll tell you how this ends. I think what the Trump team should have done a long time ago is to come clean with all of these things. I don't necessarily think that there's collusion here. I think you've got people who are fast, loose, politically inexperienced, and the one person with experience on their team throughout the campaign is a guy who's made tons of money from the Russians, and that's Paul Manafort. So these guys had kind of a soft spot vis-a-vis Manafort and their business dealings for the Russians. But you see why you need, as an American, particularly a successful brand, you need to guard against Russian influence. And the Trumps don't guard against foreign influence. They'll take meetings, and Trump, the president in particular, loves being flattered. So the more you can flatter him, the more opportunity you have to get close to him. So this is why those of us who are concerned about the Russians constantly warn about them, because people who are not that politically savvy, and the Trump family is not politically savvy, they get taken advantage of. They see politicians as, you know, people they can buy and sell, but what they don't realize is Russian intelligence, they're very good at what they do, and you constantly need to be on your guard. So I think they've made a lot of stutter steps here, a lot of mistakes. They should have called the FBI the minute the Russian government offered them dirt on Hillary Clinton. This is going to be a stain on their record, but it is 100% of their own making, and this is because they have this fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants style. And they allowed Manafort to give them absolutely horrific political advice.
Well, Brad Thor, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. And don't forget, you can see Brad Thor. You can meet him Friday, July 14th. That's tomorrow, 7 o'clock at the East City Bookshop. Larry O'Connor will be hosting a Q&A session, and you could be there. Just go to WMAL.com for more details. Brad, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.